Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. This is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200%ers. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community. Listen to Life as a Gringo on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets, and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 122, episode 4 of Your Daily Zeitgeist, a production of iHeartRadio. This is a podcast where we take a deep dive into American shared consciousness and say, officially off the top, fuck the Koch brothers, and fuck Fox News, and fuck the coronavirus. It's Thursday, February 27th, 2020. My name's Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. Biden. I'm amazed at the way you're losing all the time. Biden, I'm amazed at the way they praise you. That's courtesy of Christy. I'm a Gucci man, and I'm thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray!
Cause yes, this hostess might be Miles of Gray. Miles Gray. Miles Gray.
And I'm really sorry for this purple rain, a.k.a. I really realized Tyler Birch, at Tyler Birch, we should have said, Birch. Dearly beloved, we have gathered here today to talk about this thing called Zeit. And we missed that. That was low-hanging fruit. But I hopefully I made it up with that purple rain, a.k.a. Thank you, Tyler Birch. Thank you, the state of Minnesota. Thank you, Snow. Thank you, Alley Bunnies. And thank you, Skyways.
You know I don't have any other way to open this show. I always have to open it with the same way.
Oh, I meant the live show.
Oh.
Yeah.
Also, can't think of my speed.
We'll get
Miles.
Teleprompters next.
Yeah, exactly. It's all teleprompted. Everybody should know that about the live show. Speaking of the live show, we are on the road with our time machine and super producer Anna Hosnier in tow. We were in Minneapolis last night or two nights ago. We are in Chicago this very evening.
Oh, yeah.
February 27th.
Please
the Sleeping Village with Daniel Van Kirk. Sandwich. Please. Yeah. Bring Italian beefs, throw them on stage.
Wet though. Make sure they're wet.
Yeah. Make sure they're dipped in the au jus. we're in Toronto tomorrow night, February 28th at the Great Hall with Mark Little. For tickets, go to dailyzeitgeist.com and go to the live appearances tab. This is the end of the tour. This is it. You guys, this is the last chance to catch, this time machine, this trip back through time.
Yeah, till we do the next one.
Yeah, till we do the next one. But this is, I think we're going to retire this particular show.
Well, yeah, see, we like to make the show special. We like to make it so if you show up, you get to see something that nobody else sees. That's why we don't put the shows out publicly, because we want to create something special for the people who come out. Not to say that the cities we go to are special. They are in their own way.
They
are
special.
The ones we don't go, you all are special too. And
we don't like you quite as much until we've been there and met you in person.
Yeah, that's true. And then we meet them in person, and you bring your blunt offerings to the altar of gray. then everything is fine. But I'm really stoked to still see the rest of the country and meet the rest of y'all because everyone's been good.
Yeah, it's been an awesome meeting everyone. It's been, a lot of fun.
The only thing that varies, I think, from show to show is the level of inebriation from the guests, from like the people in the audience.
Usually pretty fucked up, though, I'd say, is generally the rule, which is good. I think it makes the show more enjoyable. Well, we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by the hilarious, the talented, the wonderful, the pod mother. She is Anna Hosnier,
aka bring her home, Peter. Bring her home to us.
That was the one clip that I was like, you know what? I might watch that episode of The Bachelor. Yeah. I not that I don't want to watch it.
I just
want to
see how
really
extra that mom is. That mom is.
Sometimes you have a mom who also wants to be a reality star and knows how to hit her mark.
I know. There's something so beautiful.
And knows how to hit her mark.
She saw that because there's kind of a... The way The Bachelor works, and sorry to really just come out hard.
We brought it on ourselves. But, we wanted this.
They like to do a lot of red herring edits to throw you off the scent. That's their whole thing. So you're like, oh no, who is she talking about? And then in the end, you just find out she's talking.
It was their dog.
Yeah, they're like the dog ran away. Peter, you really have to leave the show to take care of this. But it'll just be like she's speaking generally.
Right.
She's just being like, bring someone home to love you. And that's too much of a reaction to something.
Whoever it is, it doesn't matter.
Like she feels that this handsome white man who comes from like a good family.
Yeah,
should not
this
be
is
alone.
His only chance at love.
Exactly.
How's he ever going to find love?
I think he'll be fine if this doesn't necessarily work out.
Yeah, if this doesn't work out, this dude is going to be okay.
Over a million Instagram followers. His DMs are probably packed. And she's like, bring her home.
By the way, Zach called me and said that to me this morning.
He said,
bring her home, Jack.
Are you sure it wasn't my dog?
I think he was speaking through a translator, yeah. Well, Anna.
Hi.
We're going to get to know you a little bit better in a moment. First, we are going to take our listener. By the way, I'm keeping my microphone up with my chin and nose because we have it on a wobbly table. So,
This is what we do to,
what we do
to bring you the
for
content.
You. But we're going to tell our listeners a couple of things we're talking about. We're going to talk about Harry. Miles's birthday twin.
Just Harry now.
Just Harry. He's not Prince Harry anymore.
Hell no.
So don't call him that. He doesn't like that. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk about Trump's Wall Street boner. We're going to talk about the debate from a couple nights ago. And the crowd in particular seemed to be really just revved up for a couple of those candidates in particular. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about Pete Buttigieg's tweet that he had to take down because...
You've kind of forgot history.
Yeah. He was talking about how Donald Trump was nostalgic for the 50s and Bernie Sanders was nostalgic for the radical 60s.
Oh, boy.
Equally bad things in his view. Wait a second.
I don't know. I'm just like not a fan of human rights.
Right.
Well, yeah, I think that's when he...
The civil rights movement, you
that's
mean?
That's not... Yeah. I mean, when he was saying it, it was clear what he was talking about. But when you put it in a tweet, they go, don't tweet that. If you're reading that very narrowly, you're like, what?
Well, but what is he talking about? Because
he's talking,
that was...
I mean, we'll get into it, but he's referring to the sort of Cold War sort of shit. Like, that's what he was like, because the attacks that he's been getting on that time.
Okay, whatever.
But, I mean, that's what he means. I don't think, I mean, it would be amazing. The way it came out in the debate was sort of in regards to how he's getting hit by, like, because he's not being just so overtly hostile about, like, countries that traditionally the Western world looks at as
we'll talk
actors.
About it, but I'm just saying that a lot of the things that Bernie is currently being criticized for from people like Pete Buttigieg are the same things that the people on the left who were doing revolutionary things that we're talking about were being criticized for in the 60s. So you can't just be like, well, no, not that one, this one. Like,
well, but if I'm saying in the context of, because it came out of the debate, an answer in the debate.
Stop defending Buttigieg, Miles.
I'm sorry,
I've had enough of your, we all know you're in the tank for him.
I think, I'm just saying, let's give him a shot. Let's hear this guy out.
Yeah.
Jack, love is blind.
That's true.
I had to get my mom off that train this morning.
The love is blind.
Yeah.
Really?
We had a conversation. She's like, you're in Minnesota. Isn't that where Amy Klobuchar is from? I like her.
Okay.
And I go, what do you like about her? She goes, I think she's logical. And I go, what else? She's like, I don't know. I'm not really supporting her, but I think I like her.
Shout out
and
to
she's
her.
Like, I like Pete. And I'm like, what's going on, Mom? And then, you know, my mom spoke some sense to me.
Yo, she got me. I mean, I don't know. I've talked to some people lately who are like, I wouldn't necessarily expect to be more moderate, who have some moderate points of view.
Well, I also realize, like, my mom, self-admittedly, she's like, you know, the people she interacts with, she has like a very much generational immigrant bubble that she's in. But she's sort of aware enough to realize that, because when I talked to her, she's like, oh, right, the stakes are different for other people, which is why I see why people are motivated for other candidates.
I also think that people who, like, from a previous generation, it's not just that they're scared of, like, communism, it's that they are very much a part of that media bubble that is like, you need to be moderate, because Clinton was considered like a leftist by them. Anyways, we're going to get to all of this, Bloomberg's incompetent handling of a New York emergency, all of that and plenty more. But first, super producer Anna Hosnier, we like to ask our guests, what is something from your search history that is revealing about who you are, ma'am?
Who you are.
Madame?
Ma'am.
You
know, I Google this a lot because as of in the last year, I've like kind of lost a lot of hair. And I don't know if I don't really understand like when you truly start losing hair because it's all over the place on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
WebMD says I have cancer, but everywhere else it's like.
Well, WebMD will always.
Yeah, exactly. That's the bit. But
that's the bit.
But I'm trying to figure out, like, is it. Am I just hitting that point now where, like, my hair is thinning out? Because for my whole life, I've had the thickest hair.
Sure, yeah.
So, but
still
now
looks
it's
thick from here. I'm gonna tell you that.
Yeah, but you know, like, you know,
Your hair. Yeah, yeah, like, we all know our hair.
Physically, like, it don't feel the same, and I'm starting to think, like, is it starting to go? Is it time?
Is it from? Can it be like from dyeing your hair, doing treatments and stuff? Does that affect?
I mean,
it
I've that. Yeah, I mean, I've been doing treatments on my hair my whole life, and based on the amount of treatments I've done, I kind of in my mind assumed it would have gone sooner.
Mm.
Right.
So maybe my hair just really held on as long as it could. And now
but there is like some common thinking that like at a certain point, like your hair starts thinning out. Too.
My mom always said it like, don't hate on your hair because it'll all be gone. And I'd be like, oh my
Wait,
God.
Wait, really?
Well, she'd be like, look at my hair. I used to have the thickest hair and now look at
is
me.
It
and
thin?
I'm like, I mean, it's not like super thin, but it's definitely thinner than
mine.
Sure,
sure. Yeah, I mean, it happens with age.
Yeah, so I don't know. I just been looking into it because I'm curious.
Mm. Do you do that thing where you just, when you wash your hair, you look at the hair that comes on?
Of course
and you try,
I do.
And you just try and put it back on?
Of course
and
like, I
maybe
do.
It'll reattach.
Just like create a little like bird's nest on top.
Yeah, I have waterproof super glue in the shower every time I go in, just hoping for the best.
My wife has very thick hair and our wall is covered in just like.
She leaves it?
Yes.
Sometimes. Oh, that's nice. That's a nice place to be in your life that you're comfortable enough to leave it. Because my boyfriend's like, get your goddamn hair out of here.
Well,
oh, don't think
how
that I don't
okay.
do that.
Okay.
Oh, what I do is Her Majesty, because she has this thing. I see her do it where she like when it's on the wall, she like does her finger
do
in a circle, that technique. And
then
so it like sort of concentrates in one area and then leaves these little swirlies. I take them off. I keep them. And then I present them to her in her bed. I'm like. You forgot these. She's like, why did you do this? Fucking gross. I'm like, I don't like the hairy walls in the shower.
I do that too, and then I throw it away.
I have a sweater that I'm working on made of her.
Just in case you ever lose her, you want to be able to smell her. That's kind of beautiful, and I really like that.
He's like, yeah, when we go on the road like this, I have my wife's hair bag I just into.
That's truly hashtag relationship goals.
A hair bag?
Yeah. That's your significant other just smells from time to time to remember your scent.
What is something you think is overrated?
Overrated, and this comes from the fact that we've been traveling a lot, but hotel towels. I always want to say, like, okay, you know, you get a nice hotel. This towel should be fluffy and, like, just,
soft.
Smooth. Yeah, soft. They're
but
so
they're
crispy.
Over-laundered, yeah.
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 They're like, bleached so to, often. Which I understand. I do want a clean towel, but at the same time, it's, like, it's so
it's
rough.
A little softener. Come on,
yeah.
Baby. Treat us good.
Like, I'm like, I'm dry now. That's me just wiping my skin.
It's weird. I feel like maybe there has been an arc. I used to think hotel towels were the apex of towel quality.
Right. Mm. That's what I did too.
And but that like I don't know. That was like my perception maybe in the like 90s and early 2000s. And then as I maybe as I travel more as an adult rather than like a wide-eyed like minor who's dependent on their family's money, like you start being like, man, I paid all this money for this shit.
Yeah. Right.
Looks like this versus a kid. I'm like, I can use 9 towels.
Right. And I feel like spas, like if you ever been to a spa,
got good towels.
Spa's got the good towels. That's true. Even like some gyms have nice towels. Like,
but I wonder, is it like the presidential suite that they save all the nicest towels for or something?
Yeah, we should do an experiment. Question.
We should get a presidential suite.
Yeah, what we should do, next one, we book a presidential suite just to see what the towels are like. The second we get there, like, actually, bro, I don't need this room.
Yeah.
Downgrade me to the cheapest room you have. Immediately, I need my money back or else I'm going to have a panic attack in the lobby.
My wife was in Las Vegas last weekend. She was volunteering, knocking doors. That's not true. She was there for a fun thing. But she met somebody who had gone for the Tyson Fury fight and had like ordered a room that was like wild expensive at the casino where the fight was.
Oh boy.
And it was like, it cost what a presidential suite would cost.
Oh.
It wasn't even in the hotel. It was in a different hotel that you had to like walk through, and it was basically like a towel closet. So that's just something to keep in mind. If you're ever going to Vegas.
Was it at Mandalay Bay?
I forget where it was. It was
because that sounds like when people go to Mandalay Bay and they're like, you're actually at the hotel, which is a walk on the other side of the property.
Yeah, exactly. So watch out for that, guys. What is something you think is underrated?
Underrated. Like a nice warm biscuit with gravy on it.
Oh, hell yeah.
I don't know why, but in my older age.
As my hair thins.
As my hair thins, and I become quite peculiar about how
just
towels feel on my
up.
Skin. Yeah. It really is. The more I've aged, and I'm not like old, guys. I'm only 29, but I'm actually starting to like feel the effect. You know, Miles, how you're always with your walker at the mere 35 you're at. No, I'm just joking. Miles is young and sprout. But
sprouts. I'm sprouting.
You are sprouting.
I'm sprouting new hairs on my head. These chia seeds are starting to sprout on my head.
You really said sprout.
Yeah, I feel like you start dying of old age at like age 28, late 20s. That's when it starts happening.
Right, right. So I like a certain like comfort food. Like I've never been a huge meat eater my whole life. It's more in my later life because my mom's a pescatarian. So the only thing I really ate was fish for most part, except for like kebab every once in a while because my dad would, you know, force us to when he was grilling. But there's something about like a nice biscuit with a nice warm.
Ugh.
It's just
so
soft and it's.
I mean, I know your brand, Anna. Wherever we go and there's a biscuit,
and
you'll be like, I already ate dinner, but I saw there's a biscuit on the menu. All right, I'm gonna get that too.
Ma'am, it's almost midnight. Yeah.
The biscuits are really old.
I love a
good bring me
biscuit.
The biscuit.
And if you hit it right, you get it right when they bring it out warm and you're like, it's like heaven. I could use that as a towel. I love it.
We should start combining our interests for our next tour where it's like we only go to states where weed is legal and they're in cities where people say the best biscuits are.
Yeah. Right. Oh.
Please bring your biscuit offerings to the next show.
Please.
That makes a good biscuit. You know what I mean?
Although, of the places I've been where weed isn't legal, the people of...
The biscuits tend to be better.
The biscuits tend to be great. No, people of Minneapolis don't seem very worried about they're smoking on the street.
Nah, you know, look. It's
is that I mean, I feel
love.
Like that's not the case in New York, maybe.
New York is fine.
People
I mean,
smoke on the streets.
It's just
in
like
New York?
It's really, I think, just the general attitude of the population is towards weed. Like, you know,
yeah. Anyways, when I called the cops on you guys, they didn't come.
Yeah,
so,
they didn't.
Yeah,
come.
That makes a lot of sense.
And I'm like, Jack, you put my life in danger.
What is a myth? What's something people think is true you know to be false?
This is something I realized recently, and I don't know why I have to constantly like explain myself before I tell you, but something that like scared you as a child, or like freaked you out because you didn't have like a good enough understanding or context of it doesn't necessarily mean that it won't do the same as an adult, even when you've grown and you've learned and you've read and you've got all this context for things, because I've been having like a tough month. So, and my mom she's like a devout Muslim woman.
Mm-hmm.
Seems so at goddamn peace all the time. Nothing can
unwavering.
Like, she's always like, "Hey, you know what? I just know that there's a plan for me, and everything's gonna be okay, and I'm gonna make it, and whatever happens, happens." Which, when you're like young, that's infuriating, and you're like, you don't get it, Mom.
Right.
But, you know, as I've gotten older, I'm like, God, how do I find this peace she has? So yeah. She was like, I don't know, like, look at the Quran again. I don't know, like, read something.
Try
and find something that you enjoy. Like, and again, she's never really pushed Islam on me because it's kind of her own thing. Like, my dad's very secular. So she's never felt the need to be like, you have to do this, because it's almost as if she doesn't want me in her... hang out with her girl group. Anyway, she does. She has like a very intense like group of like Muslim friends, and they do Quran study every Friday. And right. They like, it feels like a party sometimes where I've been at home and walked in. My mom's like, can we help you? And you're like, oh.
All right. Okay. You kids be good now.
Yeah, am I lame?
Yeah. She's like, okay, because we're doing something in here.
Yeah. Right.
So, you know, I, and as a child, I flipped through the Quran just casually trying to like, learn, read, and it freaked me out. It was just so, I think just like the practice of like the certain thing, like the ideas that they put forth that you would like have to like apply and like think about, it was too much for my little like 6-year-old, 7-year-old brain.
Any religious text is like that for a child.
Or maybe even I was like 10, I can't remember exactly, but it really freaked me. I had like nightmares. Like I was scared the jinn was going to come get me, or like, it was like all this stuff that I didn't understand to create enough context to understand like, no, it's just like it's not like a creature that's coming to get you. It's just like a...
Yeah, we internalize these sort of
right. Perceptions. And then I looked at it again because I was like, I'm going to try and find some peace. And it didn't sit right with me.
Was
I don't
it,
know.
It wasn't
there was
the same?
Some certain... It didn't hit as much where I was like, a creature's coming to get me, you know? It right. was more just like the things I was reading, I it didn't sit right with me. And it's not that I'm like saying like, you know, Islam Quran is not for me. The Quran is not for me. But like, I didn't know how to take, it felt so real and so like rooted. And like, it was just like some, I almost felt like I was being like I was being invasive into a religion that I wasn't allowed in because I didn't have, my mind wasn't open enough. Like it really, it hit me in a way I wasn't expecting where I was like, I was like, I'm not pure or good enough for this. Like, I don't feel like I should be allowed to even like apply any of this to my life. It was a weird thing. Like it was maybe a little bit more of a mature reaction, but it still hit me in a way that unnerved me.
Sure.
Like right. I was like, oh, like I'm just so set in my ways now that it's going to be very hard for me to start internalizing any of this because everything I'd be like, what? What?
You're doing that as you read.
yeah. Like
just out loud.
My reactions to it were a little unnerved. And I think I just, I wasn't raised in it, so I don't know how to take it in, and I think it also like kind of freaked me out.
Sure. Well, I think it's also like, you know, on one level we have to be open to things, and I understand too, like when especially reading any kind of religious text, I think if I picked up a Bible now after going to like Lutheran and Catholic schools from kindergarten to 12th grade, there would be something I would feel slightly disingenuous because at the time I was never really engaging in any, like I had no beliefs that were rooted in it. But I think there's something too, like, it sounds like you're at a point too, where you kind of, you're looking for a new way to sort of take in your life experiences. And I think that's always like the most stressful times we have, at least for me personally, are typically when I'm on the precipice of some kind of sort of shift in my thinking or perception. Yeah. And that's typically when we're at the most anxious because everything we were using to sort of make sense of the world isn't quite giving us the same level of security or like base of anymore. And so sounds like you're on the point of a breakthrough. You know, and for $14.99, you should buy my tapes.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask.
Yeah. No, but I think that's important. But yeah, also recognizing too, like, you know, we're all looking for new ways to process our experience too. And sometimes we have to let go of new things, develop new ones.
Yeah.
But it's a process, you know?
I think what you were saying about like feeling like you were walking in on a party, that resonates with me like, you know, having been in recovery for a few years now, I think a lot of what people replace like substances and like things they used to use to like get out of their own head with is like spiritual stuff, like spirituality. Yeah. I know for myself, I used to use like alcohol and, you know, other things that I don't use anymore to achieve some of the things that like people use like spiritual things for now. I think there's like something connected there.
Right.
And then I think it's just hard to think your way out of anything that's like mental because like we don't have access to 90% of our mental processes, and like we're inside of them. So it's just hard to, I always say, like, I feel like we're uniquely bad at judging our own selves and our own minds, because it's just, we don't have the perspective. Like, that's what therapy is. So like trying to solve a problem like you're having, or like, you know, just think your way out of something that goes back to like how you were raised and like your childhood is just so, so difficult.
Well, and we're also taught to like think about a problem to solve it.
Right.
It's like, I have a problem, so now I will think about it.
Yeah.
And now I have completely, my thought process has been completely taken over by obsessing about a problem.
Right.
Because it's like a habit of being like, well, that's how you solve it. You think about it. Yeah. But it's actually not the way to solve anything.
Right.
Like, there are problems that I think that maybe have some kind of process to it that you can solve by being like, oh, this bridge has collapsed. How do we solve that? You can solve that. But if it's sort of like, holy shit, man, like, you know, especially for me as like a creative or something, right? You have fucking imposter syndrome or some shit. And you go, man, fuck, dude. Like, I don't know. Like, let me think about this shit. It's at that point, you've only surrendered all of your energy to magnifying your problem. You're actually not solving it. You're expanding it exponentially. And it's making it even harder to get out of, because the solution has become think about the problem.
Right.
Rather than, okay, this problem exists, but there is a way to pivot to what this, how I move past that, how I solve that, or acknowledge that the problem exists, but then bringing in other energy into your thought process of like, but I'm doing these things right.
Right.
So that might be in one way, but I think purely obsessing about our problems is a bad habit we have, which is sort of born out of how we're not really told about our own like mental, emotional hygiene.
Right.
It's just sort of like, yeah, you got a problem, fucking obsess about it.
Yeah.
And then
That, and I feel like sometimes you forget that like an outside perspective is necessary for someone to like stop you from spiraling in a way.
Oh, for sure.
Be
oh,
like, well, sure. I don't see it that way. And you're like,
that's why I got to listen to these Tara Brach meditations, man. You know what I mean? You got to look inside yourself, recognize that shit, and also realize that's not me. That's a thing happening in my experience. But it's very easy to then replace a problem by somehow that being like your identity or your existence is that problem. And it's not.
I actually prefer the Tara Reid meditations.
She
has some interesting things to say.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us. Oh, yeah.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. Now, this is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200 percenters. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. If you ever felt like you were always too much this while also never being enough that, this is the podcast for you. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more via my own personal stories, along with interviews with inspiring thought leaders from our community. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community that you need to know. So much of what makes our community so beautiful is our diversity, yet too often, those of us who don't fit into this dumb, stereotypical box of whatever it means to be Latino are left without a voice or just forgotten about. On this show, I celebrate the uniqueness of our culture and invite you to walk in your authenticity. Listen to Life as a Gringo as a part of the Michael Tura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courteney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
And we're back, and let's talk about Megxit.
Mm-hmm.
So, where are we in the process? We're kind of, they're closing out their royal duties.
This is their last run of official, like, working, like, engagements. As they put it, the final round of public engagements as a senior working royal. And he was recently at this, like, launch of a sort of environmentally conscious, sustainable travel initiative. And when he was about to come on stage, the host of the event basically said, before I bring him out, quote, he's made it clear that we are all just to call him Harry. So ladies and gentlemen, please give a big warm Scottish welcome to Harry. I just like that they still treat him with the reverence of a royal. And it's like, he's made it clear. Right. That we are all just to call.
Yes.
Prince Harry commands us to just call him Harry. Therefore, we shall. But wow. They're being sensitive to, you know, him sort of distancing himself from, you know, his title. I really feel like we need a reverse King Ralph type script about, you know, this guy who's just like, dude, I'm just Harry.
Reverse King Ralph.
You know?
Yeah. It's going to be a great movie.
But he still has, they still have their HRH titles. Just won't use it. Her Royal Highness or His Royal Highness. But they just won't really be using them publicly. It's just, he's growing up, man.
Yeah.
So he's all grown up.
And they're on their way to Canada, correct?
They live in Canada already, yeah.
Oh, they do? Oh, yeah. Wow. Look at them.
I think that's a sign I just need to go with my Her Highness and live in British Columbia as well.
Yeah.
Just live my life.
Shit.
Maybe his security people will be like, we know you're obsessed with him, sir. Please keep your distance.
Please
you are not going
distance.
To smoke weed with him and hang and play FIFA.
Do they still continue to have their security, even if they're stepping down from duties?
I don't know what the security is like for them. I can't imagine that they're just sort of like walking around willy-nilly.
Especially after hearing this episode.
Yeah.
They're probably not
There's guys with the same birthday who want to hang out.
We need you back. Let's talk about Trump's Wall Street boner.
Oh, man.
Loves to take credit for some good economy.
Yeah. He definitely needs to call a doctor for an erection lasting 8 or more hours for the Wall Street markets. Because, you know, everything with the economy, whether it's the economy that Obama rehabilitated or the stock markets going up and down, gains, whatever, he has to take credit for. Like, you know, that's like his lifeblood. It's the only thing he like really feels strongly about. But that also means when shit goes down or the markets start to get depressed or the numbers start going down, he's got to find fucking somebody to blame, some common enemy, some reason why it's bullshit and there's nothing to worry about actually because he's King Wall Street. Keep your money safe. And right now, because of coronavirus, it's been impacting the markets, like from the quarantines to travel restrictions, just the slow decreased trade. It just means now that Trump has to lie and begin to point the finger. So recently he tweeted, low ratings, fake news, MSDNC, Comcast, and CNN are doing everything possible to make the coronavirus, he spells it like car-ona, but okay, anyway, coronavirus look as bad as possible, including panicking markets, if possible. Likewise, their incompetent do-nothing Democrat comrades are all talk, no action, USA in great shape. Somehow randomly tags the CDC in it, then says, I will be having a news conference at the White House on this subject today at 6 p.m. CDC representatives and others will be there. Thank you. Okay, so...
Wait, so he's like, everything's fine. I will be having a news conference to address the crisis.
Yeah, to tell you how fine it is.
Yes.
Now, mind you, privately, Trump has been going off about, he's like, the CDC... Health and Human Services, they're fucking me by like telling people about this global possible pandemic threat. They're fucking me over. Like he's pissed that they're even
that they're telling people. About it. Yeah.
Okay. So listen, right? The head of immunization at the CDC, Nancy Messonnier, if I maybe completely butchered that name.
No, you nailed it.
She was saying that like disruption to our everyday lives due to this illness may be severe as it spreads. And as she says, quote, ultimately, we will see community spread in this country. It's not so much a question of if this will happen anymore, but rather more exactly when this will happen and how many people in this country will have severe illness.
Also, just some breaking news is that a Korean Air flight attendant just tested positive for coronavirus in Seoul, but she had been working at LAX. So that's something. That is happening. Where we were just yesterday, 2 days ago. So,
yeah, this is, I mean, like I said, the CDC, and most like, you know, there are articles saying like, look, don't panic, but be prepared.
Yeah.
Right. Like they're saying, if you have medications that you need, make sure you have maybe a month's supply, because if things were to be seriously disrupted, you don't want to be caught out with not having your vital medications. Wash your fucking hands at a bare minimum.
The medication thing is so frustrating to me because with our healthcare, you can't get your medication. You can't be like, I need extras. They're like, oh, sorry, you know the rule. Your healthcare only allows you to re-up only within
but
like
what about coronavirus?
Days.
I don't know. Does your insurance policy cover that?
Right.
Oh, that's so frustrating.
Yeah, and again,
a lot of
this will
don't
be
have that ability.
These are possible reverberations we could see that would put people in very bad situations. And God help us if we get to a situation like that where people are like, "Hold on, I need access to my medications, but because of the virus and like prohibitive costs, I went." Oof. So also, there's also just basically wash your hands. You're cutting down your risk by 30% to 50% just by like being very on top of keeping your hands clean and washing down your surfaces, all that shit. So, you know, watch out, y'all. But again, Trump is really does not want people to think that this is a problem when most of the experts are saying we need to be very aware of this.
Right.
And also other people are saying we might be wholly unprepared to handle something like
right.
this.
Right. I mean, we've seen how an authoritarian government treats it with in China. You know, they were trying to keep it under wraps. They made some journalists disappear who were reporting too honestly about it and making it seem too bad. And I mean, it's pretty easy to see how Trump is going to respond to something just by looking at the way authoritarian governments respond to the same thing. So he's going to tell everybody to shut the fuck up if he thinks it makes things in his government look bad or out of control or like there might be a problem.
Yeah, or just basically gaslight us and be like, everything's fine. So case in point, right? Larry Kudlow goes out there and basically he goes on CNBC and he's, you know, one of the president's advisors, you know, like how to just on this economy. He goes on CDC and just fucking lies on CNBC to like get people to I guess chill the fuck out.
Well, look, our public health people, who are spectacular, the best in the world, are preparing for any eventualities. And that's exactly what they should do. They were ahead of the curve on the travel bans. Now they're ahead of the curve insofar as laying out potential emergency plans. That doesn't mean it's going to go into effect, but they're doing exactly what we're doing. We're going to get a supplemental. We've asked for a supplemental up on the Hill of a couple of billion dollars or so. That's exactly what they were doing. I just want to say, though, as far as the U.S. is concerned, when you look at this, I mean, you had a little higher head count on the infections because of the cruise ship people coming off. We have contained this. We have contained this. I won't say airtight, but pretty close to airtight. We've done a good job in the United States. Hats off to our public health people.
So don't worry. Nothing to see here. We have it fully contained.
Right.
And he's like, look, yeah, people died. But like, it's not going to be an economic tragedy, guys. Let's not get all freaked out about the markets. But it's definitely affecting people, like friends of mine who own a business. Shout out Rewaxation in the Austin and San Francisco area.
Anything that has a supply chain that goes outside the United States, and especially in China or in Asia.
Yeah, and a lot of businesses, if you're getting like materials for your business from China because they come in at a cheaper cost, now your margins are upside down if you're having to find other distributors. So everything, it's so dependent on like the trade aspects of it. It's, you know, please take care of yourselves. Please be aware. Please cough into your elbow.
Right.
Okay. And please
crook your elbow. Do people know that?
What'd you say?
Do people know that crook your elbow is the place to cough?
Is that what you say? The crook of your elbow? Oh,
like
right
the inside
there.
Of your elbow. Yeah.
Don't they just say you cough like Dracula? Like you're wearing a cape? Anyway, I think that was from The Office.
Yeah. Cool.
Wow. Human life is.
We hang by a thread.
No one cares about us. It's wild to me because you get rid of the humans. What do you think? You think the markets are going to do? It doesn't make sense to me. It's like, if you're dead because no one cared enough to do something about this pandemic, this coming pandemic, who cares about the markets?
Well, no, but that's how these people operate. They're so short-sighted. There's no, like, I don't know, like, if
you're not here, what does the market matter?
Oh, well, come on.
It's for the like chipmunks that are left.
No,
so they can, you know, invest in stocks.
But you know, that's like some people, they just live by based on what the numbers they see on a stock ticker. And that's life for them. But I guess, and those are, we all live in our bubbles. And you know, some people are so wealthy, they just look at numbers.
I got to start training my dog to start investing so he can have a good life when I'm gone.
Yeah. Tell him how to play the markets.
He's running the markets.
All right, let's talk about the debate from a couple nights ago.
Yeah.
The mainstream media takeaway seems to be that it was a mess. It was solid Biden performance. Everyone went at Bernie Sanders, specifically for his Cuba take and his Anderson Cooper interview, where he said Castro's regime wasn't all bad. And, you know, possibly because... You know, the debate format is naturally limited, and possibly because this particular debate was a fucking mess.
They were screaming over each other.
He didn't really have a fully convincing rebuttal or, you know. I mean, I think he was trying to make a nuanced point in a long-form interview, and it was poorly timed because he gave the other candidates something to take out of context and use as fodder. So, you know, it wasn't probably a great debate for him. But people are also saying nobody really emerged as a Bernie Slayer. But Bloomberg seemed to be alive this time around.
Yeah.
Like he was an actual political candidate. But the big difference was, whereas in the past debate, the majority of the crowd support seemed to be with the people who had the most support as candidates. So Sanders had more support than, say, Bloomberg or, you know,
Elizabeth Warren.
Pete or Elizabeth Warren, although Elizabeth Warren had some good support in the previous debates, because I think it was also, you know, you saw people who were performing well had support. The crowd was just, you know, doing what you would expect a crowd to do when somebody had a sick burn. They would be like, ooh.
Yeah.
And when Bloomberg said something like, well, you know, if they were offended by something I said, like putting the onus on the people who he sexually harassed, like people were like, oh God. But this time, that wasn't there. It seemed to be a little bit like I was picturing, when I was trying to picture the crowd, I kept envisioning those Fuck Jerry posts and those guys from that comedy sketch about Bloomberg enthusiasts who did like the fake Moves Like Bloomberg video where it was like, you know, trying to imagine what somebody who was actually passionate about Bloomberg would be like, what they would look like, because it was this weird sort of synthetic feeling crowd reaction to everything Bloomberg said. In particular, it seemed to tilt kind of heavily towards the moderates, and that just doesn't, like, you just generally, and maybe this is because South Carolina is more conservative, as we've talked about, it's an older demographic that's voting. Some people also pointed out that it was $3,000 for a seat, like between $1,000 and $3,000.
I think they started around $1,750.
Right. Started at $1,750, went up to $3,000. And that seemed impossible to me if it was like just an open market, because who would pay
to
watch
there.
That? But apparently the ticket price was part of a, quote, donation to one of the sponsors, which were like these different political groups. So it was, you know, rich people paying to then be in the good graces of various Democratic groups. I still feel like that might be too innocent to just be like, well, it was rich people, so they were pro Bloomberg. Because, I mean, I had the thought in past debates, as somebody who just pays attention to the political process, that, man, Bloomberg and the centrists, and by extension the DNC, can't like this crowd reaction where they're just kind of responding to sick burns and like they're potentially the candidates that the DNC would prefer, like, negatively. So like, why would they let that keep happening in a situation where in the past, like, the DNC gave Hillary Clinton the fucking questions in 2016? Like, why would they just keep letting the crowd be, you know, something that acted against what their interests were? It seems like, I don't know, at the very least, like, it makes sense to me that the Bloomberg campaign would have stacked the deck. I don't know if that's even illegal. Like,
to get
a bunch of people who support your candidate or who you're paying to support your candidate in the audience.
It would be the same thing if I were organizing for a campaign and there was a town hall or something. I'd be like, yo, I'm getting as many fucking asses in those seats to get that sort of reaction. I mean, honestly, though, too, like, there are just also, Jack, a lot of moderates, too. So without even the most, like, I think anything is possible right
now. Yeah,
totally. Where, like, that room was a lot of people who were just like, I absolutely do not like a Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren type presidency. I love a Pete Biden or Bloomberg type thing. But yeah, my other side of me would think, too, if I'm Michael Bloomberg and I just got sheathered in the last debate,
right,
I would be like, yo, what the fuck was that, bro? Like, where's my backup in the
You think
crowd?
He didn't just, like, get off the stage and, like, shout at the people who work for him?
Although,
like, that
I don't
looked
know.
So bad for
Based
me.
On how he performed, even in this last debate, I don't know how much he gives a fuck. Because even when, man, Elizabeth Warren cornered him a bunch again, and he did the same shit. He was like, one of the first moments was she was sort of pointing out, you know, you've got all these NDAs going, and he comes back and doubles down on the, you know, if they just must not have liked the joke I made.
Yeah.
It's never like, I used language that I realize was actually reprehensible and excusable, but he probably can't say that because of maybe some legal liability, because then he would acknowledge what he said was, whatever it is. He does not have a good explanation or cannot show growth past a lot of these negatives, especially when I think Gayle King was like, what did you learn from stop and frisk? You've apologized. Yeah. What did you learn?
Yeah.
He wasn't able to articulate a lesson. He just goes, I've apologized. I was one of the best mayors of the city.
Yeah.
And I spoke to black leaders about what I can do.
Yeah. I totally acknowledge that there might just be moderates out there. But, like, For instance, like I'll accept that, you know, Bernie had a line that would have gotten cheers in the past where he was like, Mayor Bloomberg has solid and strong and enthusiastic base of support. They're just all billionaires. And he got booed for that, which, right. Okay, that's fine. Maybe it's a bunch of moderates. Maybe like it's all these wealthy people. But then like Bloomberg would give really bad answers. Like at one point, it seemed like he almost admitted that he bought 21 new members of Congress in 2018.
He almost said that,
and people like shout, like cheered. They were like, yeah, which like it just seemed too much. Like
it didn't even make
just
sense.
Unnatural. It just didn't make sense. It didn't make sense as a human reaction.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that that's impossible, especially when you look at his track record of being like, hi, can I pay you to just say good things about me? Because I have so much money.
That seems to be his whole campaign.
Which makes him actually this so scary, right? Because he knows how to use money to manipulate. Like he really knows how to do it. And but even then, he may have been caught a little bit when people are cheering for just like, maybe they were just on like autopilot. They're like, if you hear Bloomberg, when Bloomberg say something, cheer. Someone say something about Bloomberg bad, boo.
Yeah, I don't necessarily think it was like a DNC conspiracy, but I do think that something was up, or maybe it's somewhere in between, you know?
Yeah, I mean, again, the chaos of the debate, like, really was hard for people to really differentiate themselves. I think Elizabeth Warren, again, got Bloomberg pretty good again.
Yeah.
But the crosstalk over each other was almost, people were like, y'all don't have a hold of this debate, and it's spiraling out. And I think that also speaks to the fact that that was a huge debate going into this next round of primaries, and people really needed to make an impact. And I think that coupled with the lack of organization made it a little bit worse. But
yeah, I think I when I watch these debates, and I've been watching them less and less, or I start to watch them and slowly like lose my mind. But like I feel like I'm not learning anything about the candidates, you know? Mm-hmm, like, I don't feel like I'm like, okay, so everyone says Elizabeth Warren doesn't support Medicare for all, but it sounds like she does based on other things. So like, why she's not getting the chance to explain what her plan is. It's like, okay, I know Bernie likes that. Okay. So I want to understand like, what's the difference between their plans? Like what's their rollout? Like, I have to just go like Google it, because these debates aren't giving me anything other than like the pure spectacle of the drama of it all. And I'm like, I don't care about this anymore. Like, I don't really like.
The moderators just set up the questions to be like that, especially CNN one.
It's very frustrating as a person who's just trying to understand who I'm an Elizabeth / Bernie person. Like, that's how I've always been. I'm not aggressively on either side, but I like to understand what their policies are and how they're different and what's going on. But I feel like I struggle to get anything from these debates other than like, okay, Pete's doing that thing that he does where he tries to be like, look how progressive I am, but in like a weird, empty way.
He has a way of saying a lot of words without conveying a lot of content. It's like, whoa. And it's just like that Fred Armisen bit.
Right.
Where it's like the guy actually says nothing the whole time. He's like, you know what it's like? Because our democracy, right? When you think about it, when you boil it down to its essence and you look at it, you have to ask yourself, why? And then before that, you say, how? And it's like,
you say nothing.
What the fuck? But yeah, I think, again, these things are set up because the media is just so hungry for ratings that it's like, well, look, people love how messy it gets. Let's just do that. And that's where they benefit.
I fear it makes me dumber, because then I sit there and the whole time the only thing I'm thinking is who yells at their staffers the most after this.
Sure.
That's all I can think. I'm like, I wonder if...
Hey, that's why you got to go to PeteForAmerica.com, shameless plug. Just go to, you know, that's why I think it's important to read is like their websites too. And you got to you just got to read it for yourself and then go from there.
She seems like she... That's like all I do. Then I'm like, oh my gosh, like I'm not, this, I've just wasted my hour being like, I wonder if Amy really did throw that binder.
If anything, you know, I want Amy Klobuchar in my corner during a bar fight.
Yeah, like I just feel like I feel almost more useless afterward and lost.
Well, and I think that's how most people are looking at these debates, especially when there's like no substantive or any questions around climate change and shit like that. It's like, what the fuck was this about, y'all? Love the race, though.
Well, let me just say this.
Okay.
It's not a sizzling, glamorous issue, but the shape of our democracy is the issue that affects every other issue.
Uh-huh.
That was the Pete Buttigieg, quote.
Oh, and then that tweet, right? So that
I could say
during
that same
debate,
thing about my butt.
Yeah, that's
the
true.
Shape of my booty.
The shape of my booty is the issue that affects all other issues.
Other
and
issues.
By other issues, I mean like the men who are looking at it.
So, you know,
but that's where I get to at these debates.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're not telling me anything, so I'm out here like acting a fool.
Yeah.
It definitely seems like it's of a part with the overall mainstream media coverage that is like, assume everyone is an idiot.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also never articulate what the stakes are for people.
Right.
Never.
Never. It's never. All just about crafting a media narrative.
100%.
And what's going to craft a media narrative and what the media narrative is and who's winning in the media narrative and, whoa, this person came out. Maybe they're going to start winning in the media narrative. Could you start winning in the media narrative? Explain that to us.
Not it's how many like, people's lives are at stake with any marginalized group, not with anything to do with people's ability to like support their families or live a respectable life. It's just all fucking empty. Yeah. And anyway, just this Pete tweet that went down during the debate, he said, "I am not looking forward to a scenario where it comes down to Donald Trump with his nostalgia for the social order of the 1950s and Bernie Sanders with the nostalgia for the revolutionary politics of the 1960s. Then that, so you know how on the debate stage, somehow everybody's tweeting in real time. You're like, motherfucker, are you on your phone?
Right.
But his staff then immediately tweets out. They sort of, they switched the language, said, "We can't afford a scenario where it comes down to Donald Trump with his nostalgia for the social order of the 50s and Bernie Sanders with his nostalgia for the revolutionary politics of the 1960s. Now, in the thing he was speaking, yes, like referencing these attacks on Sanders' inability to take like the hook, line, and sinker, like U.S. government narrative of how bad other countries are.
Right. Because
he's being a little bit sober. He's like, how come we don't talk about the regime change that we're responsible for in this country? Like, and people were like, whoa, okay.
Yeah, that's pretty
Not
radical.
Many people like will call out Guatemala, Iran, Chile, like on a debate stage and say like, yeah, we also need to look inward too here, y'all.
Yes.
And anyway, but most people like when they saw that tweet, they were like, hold up, dude. This guy, the revolutionary politics of the 60s, like the civil rights movement or like the Stonewall riots, that happened in 1969. I think a lot of people immediately took that as, holy shit, like this guy is so disconnected. I think he is disconnected, don't get me wrong. But like it immediately, the takes that came underneath that tweet, the campaign was like, oh, fuck, yeah. That
yeah, but
underlines
I,
how out of touch
like you
we
don't
are.
Think the cops who were beating people at Stonewall or during the civil rights movement were calling them commies? Like they were definitely calling them commies
sure,
and being
sure,
like,
sure.
"Why don't you go back to Cuba with fucking Castro, asshole?" Like it's, I think it's all part of the same. Like it's all part of a piece. He's attacking Bernie Sanders's politics the same way that the people who were fighting for change in the 60s were attacked. It's just that. Now we don't really have that. Like we don't, because we look back at the civil rights movement and, you know, the gay rights movement as a overall good thing now, like that's not how it was viewed back then. Back then, like Martin Luther King Jr. was viewed as a dangerous radical by the FBI and like as a communist, like they called him a communist.
The problem when any kind of movement like this happens, especially in this country, people do not like having a moment where they have to become self-aware or reflect on what might actually be happening in their own country. So if someone is telling you, you know, a U.S. foreign policy bad, it's like, what do you mean? No, I'm not. And I don't want to engage in that. So like, fuck you. Like, don't try and like bring other people up either. The irony too is like, you know, for all the shit, a lot of these people were saying about Cuba, it's like, you know, how many of them are talking about Guantanamo and the prison torture facility that we have on that island nation. But hey, you know.
Actually, I went down into a bit of a Cuba hole last night. I was curious. I truly was like, I don't know much about Cuba. I've never been. I always have like the most like propagandist idea of it because I live in America and I watch movies and television. So I have no sense of anything other than Instagram photos of everyone being like, old cars.
Yeah.
Right.
Me being like, wow, double tap. You know, like I have no sense of it.
Eight or seven that opens with Dom in
he races
he's
that
in
old
Cuba, Chevy, I believe.
And he's just like a mythical hero to the people of Cuba.
So I don't I read it. Okay, so I got into a hole of tweets. I don't know if any of this is true. I was just curious, but I'm curious if you guys have any thoughts on this. But this one
Havana,
guy, I'm gonna sing that song. Patrick Bruck tweeted, Cuba has a lung cancer vaccine we in the U.S. had no access to because we sanctioned Cuba, and then Cuba eliminated HIV transmission from mother to child, and then Cuba has a literacy rate of nearly 98% now, and that they've also like subsidized their food rations to make sure no one goes hungry. And I don't know how much, I like don't know how much of that is true, I mean, but I'm curious, like, is that like, well, does that sound right? I don't know. Is that what Cuba is? We just don't know?
Yeah, people are literate there.
Because, I mean, yes.
I think even on the other side of the spectrum, like the U.S. has a policy of like trying to systematically make people less educated here.
Uh-huh.
And as a result, you see what happens when people are less aware of things and they can't read as much to learn more things. A thing that's also missing from a lot of the discussion about Cuba are like the crippling sanctions that were put on the country. That's always missing. Like you talk about Iran, you talk about Venezuela, you talk about other places. The sanctions part is always missing. Like, can you believe what's going on over there?
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. Like, we're doing something to, like, actively trying to destabilize, like, those regions. And I think the other thing is, too, the U.S. loves to meddle in places where the people of a country are striving to ask for a fair fight. So, like, even when you go as far back as, like, Iran and, like, the oil that was there and the interests of the fossil fuel companies that were, like, we're going to pump your oil, but we'll take 80% of the profits and you get 20. And they're like, nah, 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 nah. This is our oil.
Yeah.
Like, we need a bigger cut. Then they start going, hi, Kermit Roosevelt, can you come here and sort this guy out and maybe put in somebody who will actually, like, split this money that's going to favor these companies? Yeah. Like, that's sort of the background to a lot of these things. And I think, you know, whatever your opinions are on a lot of these governments or however they're operating, I think before anyone wants to act like an expert on another country, please take an objective view of what our country does first.
Right.
I think you need to operate from there. Don't get, look, you please learn about as much as you can, but really, if you want to engage sincerely, please look at what the United States foreign policy history is, what its policy has been against working people and things like that. And then you can begin to sort of like, look at that, look at the context of the U.S. and their place in like a larger historical context.
Yeah,
to begin sort of having a good faith argument about anything.
It's so fascinating. I truly feel bad that I had no real sense of Cuba. And last night in my deep hole, I was like, where are we?
I mean, the lung cancer thing is like, there's a story about this guy who had stage 4 lung cancer and had to break the law because he couldn't get this lung cancer vaccine anywhere except Cuba, but it was illegal for him to go to Cuba.
Right.
But it was in this leftist zine called USA Today. So I don't know if we can trust that.
I did find a WHO World Health Organization article about the stopping the transfer of syphilis and HIV from mother to child. But that's about as far as I got for that. I mean, I was just curious because I read that tweet and I was like, I don't know what is what anymore. So I need more info.
Well, very narrowly, if you just go from like how the sort of official US view on it is just sort of like Cuba bad.
Yeah. Right.
Across the board. Like, and I think you can never speak in absolutes about anything. Like, it's just dangerous.
There are things that they have that we definitely would not want, and there are things that they have that we would want. And I think the things that they have that we would want are generally completely removed from the narrative.
Right. Or even if, like, you know, people say, like, oh, you know, Soviet Union bad or whatever, but, like, completely miss the part where, like, they're like women were encouraged to be involved in the like sciences very early. And like there was no gender divide. It's like, no, like everybody's pitching in. Everybody should learn something. But again, I think it's whenever we begin to speak in absolutes in general, it becomes harmful.
Yes. All right. We got to take a quick break before we get to the real issue that is facing us, which is the lingering effects of the Super Bowl halftime show.
Yep.
So we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
the war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. Now, this is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200%ers. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. If you ever felt like you were always too much this while also never being enough that, this is the podcast for you. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more via my own personal stories, along with interviews with inspiring thought leaders from our community. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community that you need to know. So much of what makes our community so beautiful is our diversity, yet too often, those of us who don't fit into this dumb, stereotypical box of whatever it means to be Latino are left without a voice or just forgotten about. On this show, I celebrate the uniqueness of our culture and invite you to walk in your authenticity. Listen to Life as a Gringo as a part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but
same old us. Oh,
yeah. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courtney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
And we're back. And conservatives are still pissed about the Super Bowl halftime show.
Still fucking pissed.
Not happy.
Wow.
The FCC has received 1,312 complaints from viewers who had something to say about the halftime show. You know, that might just seem like a silly thing to pay attention to. It's like, well, a single comment section with 1,312 comments is not like something that's going to change the news.
Especially when like 100 million people watch.
Yeah, but that is generally how like programming decisions had been made in the past. Like letters to the FCC would cause the FCC to, you know, bear down on one of the networks. So, I mean, granted, it doesn't seem like an efficient way to make decisions. It is how decisions have been made in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't know how that compares to the Janet Jackson Nipplegate scenario that caused, you know, a huge crackdown. But it does seem like significant enough to make waves at the FCC, which is significant enough to make waves across the pop culture landscape.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, just some of these complaints are—they're coming from planets I've not discovered yet. They're mm-hmm. so out there. One woman said from Utah, "I had to send my children out of the room so they weren't exposed to something they should not have seen." Okay, that's that. I understand that one.
Yeah.
How about this one?
It was TV 14, so it was if your children were under 14, yeah, just keep an eye out.
That makes sense.
And a listener or a viewer in Washington complained, "However, I was not prepared to explain to my 11-year-old daughter why Jennifer Lopez was dressed so scantily or why she kept grabbing her crotch. My daughter was asking if she was feeling sick from having so much skin showing."
That is absurd because that is what every pops, those outfits are the most common outfits between all pop stars wear those sort of like Leo,
but
like
they're
the
women of color.
Oh, you're right. Sorry. No, you're right. You're right. My bad. My bad.
Shakira was doing sexy tongue stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Reducing that to like, no.
Even Taylor Swift dresses like that at her shows. Like, that's the pop star aesthetic, is beautiful, like shimmery, like a little, some fringe.
Daddy, does she have a canker sore? Why is she doing that with her tongue?
Oh, no.
That's how all pop stars dress.
Again, this is just, but this is from the this is probably from the most shocked conservative people. Obviously, if you're still in your letter writing phase of this outrage campaign, then.
And
yeah,
also,
this
if your daughter is saying that to you, she's probably being dishonest.
Or is, yeah, or like you do that just to game your parent, like,
right.
Am I feeling sick because it's so sexy?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I know that. I definitely acted like I was more naive and like a better person than I was to my parents.
There was another one. "What are you teaching young girls?" A Wisconsin viewer said. "Dance around half naked to make men excited, then claim #MeToo for harassment?
Yep.
It's okay to be some sexual being and shake your naked rear end and expose your crotch and dance on a pole in front of the world?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that halftime show invalidated the Me Too movement.
Yeah. Again, but even then.
Not again.
But it shows you how people are looking at even what this sort of this societal moment is. It's not just like, Me Too is a thing where we're finally being honest that women are making guys go wacky and assault them. And so we need them to chill out and we need women to be less tempting.
Yeah.
And then we can reach homeostasis.
Yeah, you can't expect men to not sexually assault people when that happened when you have halftime shows.
There's
like that.
Another one. "No wonder there is sex trafficking when you call this family entertainment."
Yep.
"And where's the Me Too women? Do you not see the hypocrisy?" Hmm. Of what? Of a group of women exercising agency over their bodies?
Mm-hmm.
Not again.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, it's got to be exhausting. But as most people said, that was a pretty good halftime show.
Yeah, it was fun. I like that.
Yeah.
That was great.
It's really wonderful to see, like,
one of the first times I watched all the way through.
Yeah, like, it was, like, really, really nice to watch them really, like, get it,
yeah,
if you will. Mm-hmm. Like, I loved it.
People
and I tried to dance just like them in front of my TV and threw my back out.
And I kicked my TV over.
That's my FCC complaint. And, like, I threw my back out trying to be them.
I thought I could use this.
What does the Me Too movement have to say about that? Well, Anna. Right. It's been a pleasure. We always have you here, but it's been a pleasure having you on mic.
Hey, finally, let me talk. Just joking. I go out of my way not to speak. I'm such a lazy person.
Where can people find you, follow you, hear you, all that stuff?
Follow me around town.
Mm-hmm.
Just joking. I'm at Anna Hosnier, AnnaHosnieh on Twitter. I have two podcasts I host, Ethnically Ambiguous. I host that with Shireen Yunez. And then I also host Deckheads with Nick Turner, about the Below Deck reality show on Bravo.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know what I was about to say. So check those out if you like pure joy and absolute nonsense.
And is there a tweet or some other work of social media you've been enjoying?
Yes. So there's a really funny video out right now that I retweeted. Well, there's two. The internet, man. From Matt Lieb, at Matt Lieb, he tweeted, "Biden's motto is definitely vote for someone else," which I thought was funny. And then there was another video that at @Rachel_Conrad posted that said, "For the love of God, unmute this." And it's an otter like trying to eat a cell phone, but they put it to the tune of George Michael's, crap, what is the song? It's like,
Oh, right.
Careless Whisper.
Sorry, yeah. I couldn't remember. I apologize. I only know the MIDI tune from my old ring back. But okay. And then another one is this at Kimmy Monte tweeted, "This dog literally failed every single test thrown at him to become a service dog, and I'm screaming laughing. In my opinion, he's still a very good boy. And watch the video. This dog is just... I don't know why they keep trying. He just has no interest. He's just like, whatever. It's not even that. Like, everything, he does it. He does everything, but he just does it in a way that just,
it's so half-assed.
Like, they, like, have him pull, like, you know, pull open the fridge, like the little knobs to help pull open the fridge, and he pulls the whole fridge over. Like, it's like every little thing he does, he, like, kind of fucks it up.
Just a total fuck.
Yeah, he just goes a little too far, just doesn't get it, and it's so funny. And you love to see a fun dog living his best life and just being like, I guess I'm not meant to be a service animal.
But also just doing it with such, like, pure joy.
Yeah.
I mean, not like a dog is, like, being like, oh, you're fucking this up right now, but it's just sort of like, huh? Okay. I'm dog.
So go check those out. I tweeted them both on my feed if you want to go find them.
Miles, where can people find you, follow you?
You can find me Twitter, Instagram, at Miles of Gray, and also on my other podcast, 420 Day Fiancé, with the homie Sophie Alexandra, where we talk about 90 Day Fiancé. Hi. Some tweets I like. Reductress. Typical. This one is just a woman with, like, her hand, like, over her mouth in disbelief, and, like, out on the street. It says, "Edible, not working. Snails are battle slugs."
Oh, my God.
And another one that says, "How to sexily lounge in his t-shirt that says, friend of the pod."
That's incredible. Some tweets I've been enjoying. Kayla Kamari tweeted, "In fourth grade for a science project, I rewrote the lyrics to Oops, I Did It Again to be about the types of rocks. And at the beginning where it's like, yeah, 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 I was like, rah, 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 rocks."
That's great.
Steve AG, couple parent tweets for you.
Okay.
Steve AG tweeted, "Dear people in your teens, 20s, stop befriending people or else you're going to end up spending every weekend of your adult life at birthday parties." That is way too good. And then Best Call tweeted, "Not sure if this is what Twitter is for, but does anyone want to come over and watch my baby so my husband and I can take a quick nap? No Nazis, please." I would love to do that.
What?
Not watch her babies.
Just randomly be like, hey.
Yeah. Anyways, you can find me on Twitter at @Jack_O'Brien, and I will ask you to watch my kids. You can find us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes, where we link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as the song we ride out on.
Miles, before you do that, I'd like to actually pose another myth. Dog nannies. Why'd those goddamn cartoons make you believe dogs could take care of your kids?
Oh, when they would dress like a Saint Bernard.
They'd be like, "That's the nanny."
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
I mean, the continuation of those cartoons is CPS taking their children.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I guess we don't see. I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, they suppressed those cartoons.
I was gonna say you should get a dog nanny.
Yeah, we don't talk about our 5-year-old who we tried that out on.
Didn't go
so well.
The song going out on is Black Qualls by Thundercat, featuring Steve Lacy. Thundercat is amazing on bass. Steve Lacy is just amazing on guitar as a producer. The two of them together, it's magic, baby. So let's free that big toe and let us get it tapping, y'all.
Ooh. Stretch it out.
Mm-hmm.
The Daily Zeitgeist is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. That is going to do it for this morning. We will be back this afternoon with another podcast, and we will talk to you then. Bye.
I know
what up? I am am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. This is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200 percenters. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more. Then every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community. Listen to Life as a Gringo on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets, and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.